This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. And on the day after a big election, this is a Colorado Vote special. This state sent its 9 hard-fought electoral votes to President Obama last night, though by a slimmer margin than in 2008. Voters here decided pot should be legal as long as you're at least 21, and Democrats now control both the state House and state Senate, not to mention the governorship. Let's start with the state capitol, which CPR's Megan Verlee covers. Hi, Megan.
Hey, Ryan.
This was not just a good night for Democrats nationally, but on a state level, too.
Indeed. In the Senate, they picked up an extra seat, moving from a 5-vote majority to a 6-vote majority. But it was really the House that was quite noticeable. You know, Republicans held a 1-seat lead there. They've lost that. It looks like Democrats have picked up 4 to 6 seats in the House. And not only are they in the majority now, but, and this is something that the last 2 years of division in the House have taught us, they have a comfortable majority. They won't be at the mercy of a single person defecting from their party. They are solidly in the lead there.
What are people attributing these Democratic wins in Colorado to?
Well, a couple of things. One is the massive blow-up over civil unions at the end of the session. That really riled up a portion of the liberal base. It got them to give money. It got them out on the streets. It unleashed a lot of large donor money into the election. And that was all then targeted at vulnerable Republicans, very much on the message that if we win a majority, we're going to pass civil unions next year. And there were also more vulnerable Republicans to target because the Democrats won the redistricting fight last year. They drew the legislative map and made some safe seats for Republicans more competitive. And then finally, I think it can't be discounted that President Obama had a massive get-out-the-vote effort here, and it seems to have definitely benefited Democrats lower down on the ticket.
And what then does this change mean for policy next session? It's going to begin in January.
Well, I think a couple of things. One is that you're going to see civil unions, as I just mentioned. The other is a bill to lower tuition for undocumented students. That's been a Democratic priority for a couple of years. It had one Republican supporter last year but failed. And I talked with one of the champions of this effort last night, State Senator Michael Johnston. He's a former principal. He said that he had been texting throughout the evening from the Democratic celebration to former students about the chance to bring the bill back next year.
Here he is, that former principal.
You know, we tried to do this in a bipartisan way and couldn't get it done, and so we knew it would take retaking the House to make this possible. You know, this May, when the session's over, I won't have to go back to classes of graduating seniors and tell kids they don't really have a chance to go to college anymore. And so that's one of the most exciting parts of tonight for me by far.
And the other priority, as you've said, civil unions.
Yes, and it's interesting to note that Mark Ferrandino is now poised to become the state's first openly gay Speaker of the House. This is definitely a priority for him and a lot of other Democrats, gay and straight. But there are other bills that that he's saying he's very interested in bringing back. Ferrandino talks a lot about jobs and the economy, but the way he defines that is very differently than it's been defined under the recent Republican leadership. There's a bill, for instance, from last year that would prioritize Colorado companies in state contracts. Democrats say it's really a way to keep state money in the state. Business groups strongly oppose it, said it's protectionism and that it could get Colorado businesses penalized by other states. And so, you know, I think that's one where if it comes back, Democrats are going to be talking jobs and the economy, but it will be interesting to see if especially the business groups who sided with Republicans in recent years will agree with them.
So before this election, Megan, the break, if you will, on Democratic momentum was the Republican-controlled House. Now that that has tipped back to the Democrats, my thought is, does Governor Hickenlooper become the break? In other words, is this a man who gets his veto pen out more? I mean, I ask that because he's really cast himself as bipartisan, right? Not a deeply liberal person.
No, it's certainly his persona to bridge the parties. And I think that is what everybody is going to be looking at, to see how much daylight there is between him and legislative Democrats. Certainly last night, everybody said, you know, we're in the same party. We all agree on the same things. But the rubber's really going to hit the road when session starts. And I think especially you're going to see it on business bills because in addition to being quite socially liberal, Hickenlooper, you know, he likes to talk about how he's a businessman and how he wants to run the state like a business. And, you know, it's hard to picture him backing a lot of stuff that the Chambers of Commerce, the Small Business Federation, that all those folks are up in arms about.
And there could be some tension over fracking, I imagine.
Yes, absolutely. In last session, there were several Democratic bills that really put a lot of restrictions on that technique for oil and gas exploration and on drilling in general in urban areas. And those members still feel very passionately that the industry needs more regulation. Hickenlooper wants to do this at the state level and I think doesn't fundamentally feel the state needs an overhaul of its oil and gas regulations again. And so I think one place where we'll be looking to see if there is dissension between Hickenlooper and the Democrats is if leaders in the House and Senate let those bills get to his desk and risk a veto showdown.
Let me be quite clear that on civil unions, which we talked about earlier, Governor Hickenlooper has said he would sign that if it comes to his desk. That is not a point of contention between
not at all.
Yeah.
There is complete agreement between the House, Senate, and the governor that they want that bill and that they will probably want it fairly early in the session.
Megan, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Ryan.
Megan Verlee covers the state capitol for Colorado Public Radio. Now to the state's congressional races. All seven incumbents won re-election. In the closest race, District 6, Republican Mike Kaufman defeated Democratic challenger Joe McClosey. That district had been redrawn to give Democrats an advantage, and outside groups targeted it as a possible pickup for the Dems. But as we said, that was not the case. Kaufman, who's a member of the Armed Services Committee, promised Tuesday night to reduce government spending, including on defense.
In Congress, I will continue to fight against wasteful Pentagon spending programs that do nothing to contribute to our national defense, national security, but everything to add to our deficit.
Kaufman also promised to push for more support for veterans programs. Scott Tipton also won another term. The Republican congressman fended off Democrat Sal Pace in the third. In another closely watched race, Democratic Congressman Ed Perlmutter held off a challenge from Republican Joe Coors to keep his seat in Colorado's 7th District. In his victory speech, Perlmutter said he didn't win the race on his own.
And I want to thank every one of you, I mean from teachers and organized labor, Latino community, environmental community, credit unions. So this was a team effort like nobody has seen before in Colorado.
Also winning re-election to Congress, Republicans Cory Gardner and Doug Lamborn, and Democrats Diana DeGette and Jared Polis. With all of Colorado's incumbents prevailing, the state's U.S. House delegation stays at 4 Republicans and 3 Democrats. And now to Colorado's groundbreaking decision to legalize recreational marijuana. It passed by 6 points. But what happens going forward is hardly without controversy. CPR's health reporter Eric Whitney has more.
The effort to legalize marijuana for recreational use by adults was by far the splashiest of the constitutional amendment campaigns. In his victory speech, longtime legalization campaigner Mason Tevert summed up what he hopes will be the result of Colorado voters approving Amendment 64.
To know that come this next year, there will not be 10,000 arrests for marijuana possession in the state. That is a good feeling. So
that may frustrate the broad bipartisan coalition that opposed 64. It included most law enforcement in the state. Business and education groups and many local elected officials came out against it too. But Governor John Hickenlooper, who also opposed the amendment, issued a statement saying, "The voters have spoken and we have to respect their will." But he added, quote, "Federal law still says marijuana is an illegal drug, so don't break out the Cheetos and goldfish too quickly," unquote. Exactly how federal law enforcement will react to marijuana legalization in Colorado remains to be seen. During the campaign, the U.S. Justice Department said it won't turn a blind eye if there are dangers to the community from the sale of marijuana. And opponents say there are plenty of dangers.
It goes far beyond just allowing personal use.
Laura Chapin is the communications director for the No on 64 campaign.
It creates an entire industry here with growing operations, retail, product manufacturing, transport, and marketing. And with that type of a large-scale recreational marijuana industry, it's a danger both to Colorado kids in terms of accessibility and, we think, bad for the chances of impaired driving.
But where Chapin sees danger, others see opportunity. Wanda James is a well-known medical marijuana entrepreneur in Denver.
Part of what we want to do is actually be one of the first retail centers here in Colorado, first legal retail centers here in Colorado with edibles and bud and all different types of things for people over the age of 21 to come enjoy.
Whether that comes to pass isn't entirely up to Wanda James alone. The amendment gives city and county governments the right to ban marijuana shops within their borders. And state government still has to come up with specific rules to implement the retail sales provision. There's also a question about whether there needs to be another vote, since another amendment, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, or TABOR, says voters have to approve any new taxes, like the one on marijuana called for in Amendment 64. Even with those details to be worked out, the simple fact is that 30 days from now, state law will no longer ban simple possession of up to an ounce of marijuana. And Colorado residents will be able to grow 6 plants each, no doctor's approval or medical marijuana license required. And that makes Wanda James and thousands of other recreational marijuana users very happy.
I feel vindicated. I feel enthused. I feel ecstatic when I think about all the things that we can now start to break down walls on people going to jail, all the social issues that are surrounding this. I'm over the top. Over the top.
Colorado was one of 2 states legalizing recreational marijuana use last night. Washington was the other. But voters in Oregon said no. Eric Whitney, Colorado Public Radio News.
Voters here also passed the 2 other statewide ballot measures. Amendment S changes rules for hiring state employees. Governor Hickenlooper pushed that one, and it passed despite criticism that it might open the doors to cronyism. And Amendment 65, a largely symbolic gesture protesting unregulated campaign spending, passed by a very large margin. Up next, we check back in with undecided voters to find out where they landed and why. You're here with us on the day after the election. And if there was a star of this election, I guess beyond the candidates, it was undecided voters, the small percentage of the electorate, much to the puzzlement of some, that hadn't made up its mind. We've been following some Colorado voters who were undecided and wanted to see where they landed. So back with us, Buddy Poppet of Denver, who owns an architecture firm, and Y Livingston of Castle Rock. She owns a tea business. Hi, guys.
How are you?
I'm okay. Thanks for being with us. And let me just ask where you wound up. Buddy Poppet, who'd you vote for at the top of the ticket?
I voted for Obama.
You voted for Obama. And who did you vote for, by the way, in 08?
Obama as well.
Obama as well. We're going to explore why in just a moment, but why, Livingston, who did you vote for?
I voted for Obama.
You did. Who did you vote for in 08?
I voted for Obama then as well.
Okay, so you, in some ways, represent that section of the electorate that just was not as thrilled with Mr. Obama the second time around. But you did, in fact, vote for him. What was the deciding moment for you that Romney wasn't the choice or that one of the third-party candidates wasn't a better option, Buddy?
I don't believe he was completely honest during the debates.
Mr. Romney.
He seemed to flip-flop on issues. Just speaking to the general public, I don't think he really was in touch with the hardworking, blue-collar American.
Did the 47% line hit you?
It absolutely did. And I kept looking for something from him to make up for that. But I never saw it. I really believe he's not in touch with the struggles that the everyday people who are out of work and what they're going through, the ones who are starting their own businesses, what they're going through, the people who are fighting for education reform, what they're going through.
When you talk about flip-flopping, is there an issue that you felt he flip-flopped on?
Even just culturally, his comment about the 47%. Does he care or does he not? I really didn't believe he really truly cared.
Why Livingston? Why was Obama the right choice for you in the end?
I think the opportunity that we had to witness Governor Romney in the 3 debates, coupled with just the rhetoric from the party overall, was enough to have me make a decision.
Can you think of a specific piece of rhetoric or a specific moment in the debates that swayed you?
There were lots of them. There was all these different sound bites. Big Bird was symbolic of the educational component. The millions of children.
Let's just say Mitt Romney said, I'm sorry, Big Bird, but federal funding for PBS is not something I'm interested in.
The educational component is just huge relative to that. It's not Big Bird. It's what it represents. I think the other pieces were just the party affiliation. He never distanced himself from some of the just extreme conservative viewpoints that had me worried that if he entered the White House, who would really be running the White House and what kind of influence he would be under. The John Sununu comment about Colin Powell only voting for or endorsing Obama because he's an African-American male, I thought that was offensive. And
well, let me say that you're African-American.
Exactly. I thought that was offensive.
Let me push back on the notion that you guys were undecided. Were you really? I mean, when I hear your answers, it doesn't sound like you would have stomached Mitt Romney from day one, let alone day 300 of the campaign. What would you say to that?
Well, I didn't really know Mitt Romney. Am I satisfied with the direction where we are today economically? No. So it was natural for me to question whether reelecting Obama was the right decision. So I was looking at Romney as an opportunity for change. And really honestly was looking to see if he had a better plan. If he did, if I really felt he had the better plan and could lead this country, I would have voted for him.
Why?
I think Buddy's absolutely correct. It was a situation of wanting to be neutral and waiting for the candidate to help me make my mind up. I was not just automatically going to vote Democrat or Republican, much to the chagrin of a lot of people that I know who couldn't understand. What do you mean you're not just automatically voting for Obama? I'm one of those people. I just want to hear the issues. Did I have a propensity for Obama? Absolutely. But I was willing to give Romney a chance to show who he was and what he believed in. And at the end of the day, I can't answer that question. I can't tell you what that was. And again, I was more concerned with the dramatic party affiliation things that were coming out of people's mouths that he did not distance himself from. And I think that that's part and parcel as to why such huge numbers of non-white voters ended up voting for Obama. Not because Obama was black, but because the things that were coming out of the Republicans' mouths were just too offensive for someone to say, I'm going to go with that.
Let me just interject that what we know about the electorate from exit polls is that Mr. Obama seems to have lost support among whites. He maintained support among African Americans, and he gained support among Hispanics. And let me ask you a forward-looking question about the man you both ended up voting for, Barack Obama. What do you want to see from him in the next, 3 months, 6 months, that will give you some sense you made the right decision?
I think it's important for him, that what will you do? What would you do on Monday? So on Monday, after he's, had a little chance to rest, he gets back on his horse and he starts to tackle the economic situation relative to jobs. He's going to have to really work hard on this this olive branch to the Republican side, which I believe he's been trying to do for the past 4 years. He's going to have to do it with a different level of vengeance.
Buddy Poppet, what are you hoping to see from the Obama administration?
Well, I'd like to really see how he's supporting education. I'd like to see some money supporting the growth of new programs, new schools to help support the states, some more incentive programs, whatever.
Are you talking about a second stimulus, buddy?
Yeah. Whatever we think we need to do to get education rolling again, whatever that is, I think our federal government should assist.
I want to thank you both for being with us.
You are so welcome.
Thank you very much.
Those are once undecided, now decided voters, Y. Livingston of Castle Rock and Buddy Poppet of Denver. Scott Helker of Golden was our third undecided voter, and he was unhappy with both Mitt Romney and President Obama. Although he couldn't be with us today, he did let us know his final decision. Along with about 1.5% of Colorado voters, he cast his ballot for Libertarian candidate and former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson.
He balanced the budgets, but more importantly, he talked about the need to go back and look at how our civil liberties have been eroded and say, you know, who's in charge here, the people or the government?
For Helker, who's an attorney and a legal editor, it was a vote of conscience. Finally today, if there's one thing this divided electorate does share, it's campaign fatigue. Colorado Matters asked Boulder poet David J. Rothman to write a farewell to election season. Here's his poem, Waltz of the Penitent Spinmeisters.
Hello, America. We know it's early, and we can understand you might be thoroughly disgusted by the way that we behaved these last few cash-drunk months. That's why we've saved the best for last. We're sorry. Sorry for that bad attack ad music we adore, for super PAC-backed robocalls that made your landline sound like some pinball arcade, for anxious email blasts, each a foghorn beseeching you to donate your firstborn, for Purple Mountain majesties we used so much to sell our guy they now look bruised, for YouTube rants and raves, for blowhard blogs, the tiny campaign signs for prairie dogs. We're sorry for the buttons and the hats, both Republicans and Democrats. So many sound bites blasted into space that peaceful aliens now avoid the place. We pledge no more Obama versus Romney, no more incumbent drama, hopeful nominee, no slippery TV debates whose zingers recall another show, Jerry Springer's. No more flash gotchas for the paparazzi, no binders full of women, smirks, Benghazi, legitimate rape, debating with a chair. No more debaters who aren't even there. No more conventions, rallies, plugs, pleas, polls, tea parties, video leaks, fundraising goals. No raffles, handshakes, baby kissing, stickers, endorsements, promises, fact-check nitpickers, attacks on 1% or 47. No claims to know the way God governs heaven. We swear we didn't mean most stuff we said. We're sorry. Money does go to your head. And when you're blotto on some fat donation, there's nothing you won't say unto the nation. But now that's done. We're saying what we mean. So, can we talk about 2016?
Waltz of the Penitent Spinmeisters, written especially for you by Boulder poet David J. Rothman. You can read the poem at cpr.org. And that's our show for today. Tune in tomorrow at 10 and 7 when our education reporter, Jenny Brundine, tells us whether school districts in the state got what they wanted out of this election. I'm Ryan Warner. This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio.